And according to Wet'suwet'en law, you can't make decision on another clan's territory. The only people that can make a decision on Wunastat'en territory is Wunastat'en people. Nobody from any other clan can decide for us what happens to our lands.
Okay. And what actions have you taken since you found out about the proposed deal?
We've made it public, the deal that was trying to be proposed, and I phoned the office of Wet'suwet'en and questioning them about that agreement. And I've actually phoned people that were in attendance of that meeting because they were falsely trying to say that Native Beast was in agreement with that agreement because they were talking about our territory and he's our head chief. And when I spoke to him, he didn't say he agreed to anything in those meetings. And I spoke to another one of the chiefs that were invited to the meeting because the main head chief said no to all pipelines. He wasn't invited to these meetings. They invited another wing chief into the meetings. And he said that he was attending to meetings to ask legitimate questions. He wasn't agreeing or saying no or agreeing with either party's side. So there, some shady stuff looks like it's happening. Because I'm getting conflicting messages from the various people that were in attendance to these meetings were giving me conflicting messages, so it didn't look like they knew what was going on. They were being fleeced in by the head chief, or not the head chief, the band chief, who doesn't have jurisdiction off reserve.
Okay.
He was, because I don't think that, according to that document, the agreement, it's called, it was agreement between Apache and Chevron with the Morristown Band, but in that there was a clause in there saying they had to have the Wet'suwet'en hereditary chiefs on side before they could agree with that deal, and they didn't have, we have 13 hereditary chiefs, and they had just like a handful of them, and according to our system, that's illegal because you have to have all 13 chiefs involved in any major decision. And even so, all those 13 chiefs don't make no general decision over all the territories. Each chief is responsible for their own, like Gidimdan's chiefs, if there's, they have their own hereditary chiefs. They're the only ones, along with their membership, that can decide on Gidimdan territory. And my chief, five chiefs, not just one, all five chiefs, along with all the Wunastat'en membership, only can decide on this territory. Not one person can make a decision on their own. That's not our system.
Mm-hmm.
That's the democratic way of the so-called Canada and British Columbia, how they make decisions. That's not our deciding systems. Ours is by consensus. If you have one person that disagrees with anything you're trying to pursue, you're not supposed to pursue it. And band offices, they can't do a referendum and try to decide if pipelines can go through traditional territories. That's not their jurisdiction. The only time they can do a referendum is in the boundaries of the reservation. So the example I like to use is Vancouver, because all of the communities are right connected with each other and they're divided by boundaries for their municipalities. For example, Burnaby, Langley, downtown Vancouver, North Vancouver, they all have separate mayors. And North Vancouver mayor cannot decide anything in Burnaby, and Burnaby can't decide anything for downtown Vancouver. Each of them, they have their councils, the councillors that work with them, with the mayor, and they'd only decide within those boundaries. That's the same thing set up that's set up for reservations. You have a chief and councillors based on the population of that community, and there is a boundary around the reservation, and that's the only place they can make decisions. They cannot make decisions on hereditary territories.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised to learn that PTP has intentions to carry tar sands oil? And what do you think the reaction will be in the community once this becomes known?
Wasn't totally surprised. We were suspicious of them right at the get-go. I got suspicious right away when they started out with their, when they initially submitted for permitting and passing the environmental assessment and everything. Their submission was, I believe, a 36-inch pipe. I think it might have went 32-inch to 36-inch, but when they got their approval, it was a smaller pipe. And for some strange reason, when they do amendments, they don't have to go through the whole approval process again. They expanded it to 40-inch, and now I understand it's 42-inch. And 42-inch is a standard size for oil bitumen pipe. So why would they make a standard for oil bitumen pipe if they're only going to, supposedly supposed to be just transporting frack gas? So to me, I knew right from the get-go when they expanded to the oil pipe diameter that they had every intention of transporting bitumen through that pipe. And when I saw that in the agreement, in the agreement they're trying to make with my band, it says that they would not sell it to any oil bitumen company for 5 years. So why would they just put 5 years? According to my people, they said never. I know they said never. They're dead set against Enbridge, but they were really iffy on the gas because they're telling them it's natural gas. It's safe. That's the message, and they're believing it. And the new technology is never going to break. Mm-hmm. That's the message people are being told, why a lot of these bands are buying into it, that it's safe when in fact it isn't.
And so we have recent reports that PTP has done substantial right-of-way work around Kitimat and Terrace. What response can the company expect if they attempt to cross into Unistoten territory?
They won't be crossing our territory. We've already said no. No means no. There's no negotiating. There's no... We're not holding out for them to give us some money. We don't want their blood money because we're protecting our waters, our wildlife, our land for just generations ahead for my future grandchildren, great-grandchildren, all my nieces and their children and their grandchildren. It's for the future generation. We've only got very little left. Everything's been taken up by agriculture, by municipalities, and pretty much settlers have taken over all our lands already, and now it's settlers who are trying to come in and take what's left. So we're saying no, we're not taking anymore because we've lost so much already, and we're thinking of our children. Because if we don't protect that for them, they are the ones that are going to suffer. Sure, we're living fine now, but there will be no more water, clean water for them to drink, and all the fish will be gone, and every other animal, that they're all connected and rely on each other. Fish need the water, and the bears eat the fish, and everything is connected that rely on each other. And if we don't sustain all of the earth, including the animals, if the animals die, then we're going to be the next ones to die, because we follow suit with the animals, because everything that we do on this earth today, man has learned that from animals. So why would they disrespect the animals and ruin their homelands by putting stupid pipes through this land? They've already taken everything for agriculture, and grizzlies get removed from their habitat because farmers expand, and then all of a sudden, it's not the farmer's fault that he's kicking the grizzly out of his home. They're blaming the grizzly, and the grizzly either gets shot or else gets moved to another grizzly's territory. And of course, that grizzly's going to encounter conflict because they're territorial. Mm-hmm. So everything we learn from the animals. The safe food we can eat because the animals know what's not safe. All of that was learned from animals. So, and yeah. The whole world is messed up right now because everything's all about economics, all the bottom line of how much money they can make, and yet one day that money's going to mean nothing. Mm-hmm. That whole economy is going to collapse because it can't sustain itself. There's way too many people in this planet, and pretty soon they won't be able to feed all the people. We'll run into the same problem in China. China can't sustain itself because they have way too many people, and they limit people to have one child. Well, we're running into that problem because we have a lot of people keep coming and coming into our lands, and there's way too many people and we can't keep up with it. And because we've destroyed the climate so much, even agriculture is going to have a hard time surviving with climate change.
Mm-hmm. And what was your response when you learned? What do you think the significance of is when Apache is now divesting from the LNG project?
I'm happy that it's come to that, because that was our main goal, is to ensure that the investors don't continue on investing in a failing project, because it just really blows me away that when you look at the, I work in economic development, and you look at the economy of BC, oil and gas is second from the bottom, and forestry is at the very bottom. And why are our people still trying to invest in a losing economy instead of investing into stuff that's going to improve the economy and create jobs? Right now, tourism is one of the highest employers of BC residents, and why would they destroy the beauty out here when they could look into tourism initiatives that are like ecotourism, so that you can ensure you're not going to impact the waters, you're not going to impact the lands. There's a lot of other opportunities. There's alternative energies, and technology seems to be way up there. And why are we being so stupid investing in something as it's at the tail end? You're not going to make no money out of it. It's just going to be boom and bust. So there's, I don't know, it blows me away that people in leadership, it appears to me, are uneducated and are making these uneducated decisions, while the educated people that are aware of what's going around them, and appears that people aren't listening. They're not waking up. And all I can say to these people, you're going to be woken up when the economy collapses and a dollar doesn't mean a thing. And you'll have to fend for yourself, and you're not going to survive. If you don't know how to live off the land, get your own food, grow your own food, you're going to be the first people to go. And the ones that have always lived modestly and grew their own food and knew how to take care of themselves, didn't rely on anybody else and sustaining their own families, they're the only people that are going to survive. First people are going to go is the people in city centers. You get your food in a grocery store, eventually those grocery store shelves are going to go empty. The way, because we're doing nothing to stop global warming, we're doing nothing to prevent the industry to continue to pollute, and for some odd reason Canada and the BC government is not doing nothing to minimize the pollution from these industries. Instead, they're supporting these industries and thinking that's their savior, when it's killing the whole planet and it's going to kill all mankind eventually.
Do you have any messages that you like to get out specifically to Media Co-op audience about how they can support the camp, or to, you know, to fight against the system at in their own homes?
Get educated and give facts, 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 and get the facts from the people that are already and got no more water because of the fracking fields, and people are sick and dying, and how the crooked industry has silenced them from speaking to media because they said they're not going to help them out, and they have no choice. They invest every damn dollar they have into agriculture and their farmland they bought, but then it ran out of water. They couldn't do nothing, or else if their water's poisoned, they tell them they can put in a fancy, expensive filtering systems, which are thousands and thousands of dollars, if they sign this agreement that they're not going to go to media or anybody. If they don't sign that agreement, that silencing agreement, then they're not going to help them. And a lot of them end up just signing it, because what else are they going to do? So educate people. People have to wake up before it's too late.
Okay, well, thanks so much, Frida. And we appreciate you taking time to talk to Media Co-op.
Hey.
Scars run deep. How many? when your children cry. Oh, I just got a why. Annie, she came from the laughing town. The tea became a killed her family all around. Population boom, living in two rooms. Katie, she came from downtown. Shoes on their feet. 1916 came. They played the Patriots game. Freddy, he came from the Ivy Flats. Tenement slums and infested with rats. Sleeping on damp straw, trying not to break the law. Thomas, he came from Kilmaine in Mayo. Starvation was the only life you saw in that two-room shack. Then jailed and let off rack. Children cry. Oh, I just got away. I look to the east, I look to the west, to the north and the south, and I'm not too impressed. Time after crime, they rape, rob, pillage, enslaved, and murdered. Jesus Christ was their God, and they done it in His name, so He could take the blame if it's not all a game. With Bible in one hand and a sword in the other, they came to purify my land of my Gaelic Irish mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers. With our own ancient customs, laws, music, art, way of life and culture, tribal in structure, we had a civilization when they were still not under our nations. We suffer with the Native American, Indian in Asia, of original Australia, the African people with their history so deep, and our children still weep, and our lives are still cheap. You came from Germany, from France, from England and from Spain, from Belgium and from Portugal, you are the much the same. You took what was not yours, went against your own Bible. You broke your own laws just to outdo the rival. But did you ever apologize for the hundreds of millions of lives you destroyed and terrorized? Or have you never realized? Did you never feel shame for what was done in your country's name? I'm finding out who's to blame. I'm why it was so inhumane. I'm still to teach you in your school about those glorious days of rule and how it's your destiny to be superior to me. But if you've any kind of mind, you'll see that all humankind are the children of this earth, and your hate for them will chew you up and spit you out.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU, that was Damian Dempsey with his song Colony from the album To Hell or Barbados. And of course, once again, he's talking about colonialism around the world. And, you know, once again, this is the after effects of imperialism. Greed is the knife and the scars run deep. And those scars are still here in this country. You know, to this day, you know, as Frieda Hewson was talking about with the Vancouver Media Cooperative, you know, with that interview about Unas Toten Camp, you know, this is what they're up against right now. You know, the indigenous people fighting for their dignity, for their use of the land, against this, basically the capitalist system that wants to bulldoze them, you know, for the sake of profit. You know, and that's really what the basis of imperialism really is. It's the profit motive. You know, it's these empires wanting to get in there, you know, and the class forces behind those empires, you know, the capitalist class interests that want to secure profits, secure resources, secure markets for themselves. They want to go in there and use force against the indigenous population and force them, you know, to, you know, in some cases, enslave them, use them as a slave labor force. And some, you know, that was the way it was in Australia and in South America. In some cases, you know, kill them and try to get the resources on the land, you know, which they did in North America. You know, try to bring in settlers, you know, and this sort of stuff. And, you know, imperialism manifests in different ways. But at the in the end, it's all about getting resources, getting profit, getting markets, getting, you know, getting these things, which, of course, the capitalist class and exploitative classes throughout history have always wanted. You know, it's always about more. It's always about expansion. You know, and that's what empire is all about. You know, whether that's 300 years ago or whether it's today, whether it's 1492, whether it's like 2015. You know, this is what empire is all about. You know, and like I was saying before, the really twisted thing about this country is that Canada aligns itself with empire. Canadian national identity aligns itself with empire. As of now, in the colonial state. And you can bet, like, Stephen Harper's been just amping up that kind of rhetoric. You know, glorifying empire, glorifying World War One, the Boer War, you know, all these imperialist conflicts, you know, whitewashing the crimes that were done in this country against indigenous people. And, you know, and as I said before, there's so many countries in the world where national identity is based on opposing imperialism rather than embracing it. And Canada is definitely an outlier when it comes to that. I mean, we're definitely the, you know, there's not a lot of countries in the world, actually, that define themselves in support of empire. Their national identity aligned with, have their national identity aligned with empire. It's very few of them. Most of the countries in the world define themselves, their national identity, as being against empire. You know, through the national liberation struggle, including Ireland. You know, which it only gained its independence after almost 800 years of colonization by the British. You know, that's what's normal in the world. You know, having to fight for your independence against empire. And defining yourself through anti-colonial struggle. Now, the United States is somewhat of an exception to that, because, of course, what it was a colony, a settler colony that broke away from Britain, the British Empire, fought a war of independence, and then proceeded to carve out an empire of its own at the expense of indigenous people. And of course, that empire continues to this day. You know, America imposing itself, its will on people around the world. Drone strikes, invasions, bombings, CIA campaigns of destabilization and assassination. You know, all kinds of, like, you know, various corporate takeovers, the IMF, you know, U.S. corporations going into countries and exploiting cheap labor. And whatnot. That's the face of the U.S. empire. U.S. military bases everywhere. You know, all this kind of stuff. You know, that's... empire continues to this day. And this is really what we're up against in the world. If we want to, like, secure justice in Canada and around the world, we need to face up against empire. We need to recognize it for what it is. and confront it. You know, we have to mobilize against it. All this stuff is very important to understand. So please stay tuned to Back in the USSR.
Now then you got about 5 centuries of imperialism coming along. And imperialism was when the powers of Western Europe began to expropriate the land, labor, and wealth of Eastern Europe. That was the first area of expansion and exploitation that they went into. And the second was the New World. And then having developed all the superior firepower and mobility and transportation, they went then into Africa and Asia and further into Latin America. And with this imperialism, which is a history that really, to read the history of modern imperialism, as it's still going on today, to read that history is really to read a history of a succession of the most horrendous, horrible atrocities that one can imagine. Now, when the ruling classes of these imperialist nations plundered and exploited the land, the labor, the natural resources, and the markets of other people, when they enslaved their labor, when they burned their villages, when they destroyed their industries and their crafts and their mines and their herds and their crops, when they raped them and murdered them and mutilated them, when they did all that sort of thing, and they worked them to death in the latifundios and the plantations and in the mines, then theories had to come along to justify what you were doing. And the theories about these lesser races proliferated. These lesser races were animals. They were cruel savages. They were incapable of self-governance. They were like pathetic, helpless children. They'd been around living in peace for, 5,000 years before you came along, but suddenly now they wouldn't be able to get along without us. They were devoid of the normal sensibilities that one might expect from a person in civilized societies. Again, not an anachronistic attitude. In my own lifetime, the lifetime of most of you, the adult lifetime of most of you, General Westmoreland, you remember him? Vietnam, your average Asian, the Asian doesn't place the same importance on life we Americans do. That's your average Asian. And with the massive bombings and saturation bombings, a war of horror and attrition and mass slaughter, he was pointing out that indeed one of those two protagonists did not place the same value on life as the other, but he had it mixed up, that's all. And with imperialism, there came in the 19th century the class-based, racist, patriarchal theories about human nature, known as science. Science came along and rushed in there with measurements of skulls and brain sizes. Whites were superior to blacks, males were superior to women, men of substance were superior to men of poverty. Race, gender, and class again. 19th century science gave us a great scientist, by the way, who took human beings out of the medieval metaphysical scheme of things and made them part of the natural order of things. And in a sense, it was a very revolutionary and very progressive thing that he did, a very great contribution, Charles Darwin. But a closer reading of some of the other things Darwin said in his Descent of Man, for instance, definitely shows him to be a product of 19th century science, which in turn is a product of 19th century imperialism and capitalism and upper class white male Europeans. Darwin, quote, "Man is more courageous, pugnacious, and energetic than woman, and has a more inventive genius." This is the best scientific mind of the 19th century in England, British Royal Society. "Men are superior in every activity requiring deep thought, reason, or imagination." Except imagination about women, I guess. "Men vastly excel in the sciences, philosophy, history, the arts, poetry, painting, and sculpture." Ready? Sisters, are you ready? Women excel in tenderness, unselfishness, intuition, imitation, and other qualities that are characteristic of the lesser races. Darwin argued, in effect, that women are less evolved biologically, evolutionarily. For Darwin, culture doesn't explain anything. By the way, it's true of most of these people. Cultural differences are the thing that needs to be explained. And these differences are explained as being grounded in biological development in human natures in the process of natural selection. In the Descent of Man, or natural selection, or both, combination of both. Biological, innate biological structures and natural selection and development of those biological developments in natural selection. let's turn to what Darwin had to say about races. Now, this is, we're talking right 1880. This is when England is building an empire upon which the sun never sets. At the time Darwin is saying this, the Brits are killing a variety of people from Ceylon to India to Malaysia to God knows where's Africa, or working them to death. Darwin thought that the sense of smell was more highly developed in darker races, as in animals, than in white civilized peoples. The same, by the way, with other physiological characteristics. The rudimentary ear lobule, the larger wisdom teeth, the more pronounced conical form of the canine teeth, and certain bone structures, all supposedly common to the darker races, and all, therefore, more proximate to animal physiology, testify to their less advanced evolutionary development. By the way, none of that's true. In case you want to go checking teeth. Here's Darwin talking. Given, quote, the hideous ornaments and the equally hideous music admired by most savages, unquote, Darwin concluded that their aesthetic faculty was less developed than that of birds. I mean, what impresses you is the total oblivion, the total ignorance of the brutalities of imperialism, the total ignorance of the adverse effects on the health and survival of native peoples that imperialism had when they came into exposure to European diseases. The deracination, the mistreatment, the deaths. Darwin looks at this. He discusses some particular tribe that dies out. I think it was a tribe in the American Southwest. Says they died out. He concluded that the extinction of these tribes when they came in contact with whites was evidence of their lesser biological capacity, their immunity systems, their capacities, and such. Nothing having to do with starvation, nothing having to do with injecting smallpox into blankets and then selling them to the Indians. Nothing having to do with the Gatling gun and the Maxim gun and the mass murder. They die out because they're lesser. Savages snarled more often and had less control of their fear reactions and sphincter muscles than did Europeans, Darwin said. Now, how did he suppose he found that out? And what did he do to study that one? I don't know. It's not the kind of research I'd want to do. Thus, they were more like monkeys and dogs in that respect. That's from The Descent of Man. Civilized males were less emotive than savages and less inclined to weep. Now, even among civilized males, there were ethnic and evolutionary differences, by the way. Englishmen rarely cried or shrugged their shoulders energetically, while Frenchmen and Italians were given to such less advanced displays. Why the absence of shrugging of shoulders is seen as an evolutionary gain is not clear to me. I don't understand. You see, but you're getting this very interesting convolution. You're getting the trait of what is assumed to be the more evolved person as evidence of that evolution. So on the one hand, right, that Englishman manifests these traits. Therefore, these traits must be the more evolved traits. He has these more evolved traits, therefore he is more evolved. And the thing just kind of self-fulfills itself. Darwin, by the way, is rather ignorant of the so-called lesser peoples. I mean, if you ever want to, he mentioned the Italians, if you ever wanted to see a people, southern Italian peasants, who I'm sure he would feel very uncomfortable being in the same room with, if you ever wanted to see a people, having come from that stock myself, all my grandparents, both sides, if you want to see a people who had a rigorous idea of social strictures and interpersonal diplomacy and what was proper and what was hospitality and what you said and what you didn't say and how you presented this and didn't present that. Or if you go to any savage society, so-called savage, or primitive peoples, native peoples, indigenous peoples, anywhere, whether it be American Indians or Melanesians, again, the same thing. Elaborate codes, certainly as elaborate, as advanced, as subtle, as nuanced as anything you could find in upper-class English society. Maybe not quite as stuffy, but certainly they were there. The fact that he was ignorant of them, the fact that he never saw or talked to one of these people, except to glance at them from the side of his boat, doesn't mean that it didn't exist, you see. And by the way, there was a very interesting thing that happened in the British Royal Society, where a debate broke out between Darwin and his closest collaborator, Wallace, where Wallace got up and suddenly started making very strange statements, because they had a problem. The problem was, if the human brain is a manifestation of the level of evolution, why is the savage brain not vastly small? Why is it roughly the same or so large as the white British European brain? They had these gradations. Thomas Huxley was another one who believed it. He said the most highly evolved are the Europeans. The most highly evolved of the Europeans are the upper class. The most highly evolved of them are the upper class Englishmen. The most highly evolved of them are the members of our British Royal Society. Me. Why could the world be more like me, right? Huxley, with all the characteristic modesty of his class, decided it had that hierarchy. That was Darwin's hierarchy, too. But they had this problem. If these savages had such good brains, why weren't they more evolved? And Wallace got up and he says, you know, I don't think this is a problem, because I think they are evolved. And the thing about Wallace is he had lived in Melanesia for about 2 years. He says, I've lived with these people, and I find among them people who have a range of intelligence and subtlety and imagination and gift and craft and science within the confines of their material culture and all, which the best among them could compare favorably with members of our British Royal Society. And there was a gasp, of course. That was like saying, down with the Queen or something. And that was the difference between Wallace and, on one hand, and Huxley and Darwin on the other.
This story's right, this story's true. I would not tell lies to you, like the promises they did not keep, and how they fenced us in like sheep. Said to us, come take our hand, set us up on mission land, told us to read, to write and pray. Then they took the children away, took the children away, the children away. Snatched from their mother's breast, said this is for the best, took them away. Welcome and the Holy Spirit said you've got to understand, we'll give to them what you can't give. Teach them how to really live. Teach them how to live, they say. Humiliated them instead. Taught them that and taught them this. And others taught them prejudice. You took the children away. The children away. Breaking our mother's heart, tearing us all apart, took them away. One dark day on Framlingham, came and didn't give a damn. My mother cried, go get their dad. He came running, fighting. Mother's tears were falling down. Dad shaped up and stood his ground. He said, you touch my kids and you fight me. Then they took the stronger family, took us away. They took us away. Snatched from our mother's breast, said this is for the best, took us away. Oh,
And they stirred us up again and gave us gifts to ease the pain. Sent us off to foster homes. As we grew up, we felt alone, 'cause we were acting white, yet feeling black. One sweet day, all the children came back.
The children came back. The children came back. Back where their hearts grow strong, back where they all belong. The children came back. Said the children came back. The children came back. Back where they understand, back to their mother's land. The children came back. Back to their mother.
Listening to Back in the USSR here on 93.3 FM CFRU. So we just heard from Archie Roach with his song, They Took the Children Away. And of course that song was about basically the stolen generation in Australia. But it could just as easily talk about the residential schools in Canada that of course were subject, that Indigenous people were subjected to for decades and decades and decades. Where, you know, of course, Indigenous families would lose their children, the children would be taken from them. And this thing happened in Australia too. Now, Australia, it was more tied to forced labor. You know, they would take these kids and they would be worked. They would be put to work at, like, cattle stations and on farms and, like, as domestic servants and things like this. That happened to some extent in Canada as well, but, like, it was more residential schools here, you know. And but once again, the whole process was very much the same. The whole process was to assimilate these kids, to destroy the Indigenous culture, destroy Indigenous society, and that is what they tried to do, and that, of course, is what they failed to do. The colonial authorities failed to do that, you know, even with this atrocity, this crime, you know, this attempted destruction of entire nations. They failed in that endeavor because, of course, the spirit of the people is very, very strong, and they resisted that, and they came back. You know, as he said in the song, the children came home in the end. They discovered who they were. You know, and they weren't going to allow, you know, the colonial authorities to keep them from who they were, to hide where they came from. You know, and really what that's really what it's all about, that the resilience. You know, and of course I played a clip from Michael Parenti there as well, him talking about how the different justifications that imperialists came up with to try to justify the atrocities that they came up with, and trying to, like, say, oh, it's all about human nature, you know. The human nature somehow justifies imperialism, or of course it doesn't. You know, of course they manipulate these narratives about human nature to try to justify the things that they do, that, you know, that empires do. You know, and this is what of course we're up against. Like, there's still narratives today, you know, trying to justify these kind of colonial destruction of Indigenous cultures and theft of lands and all these kind of things in this country. You know, like, we're taught this kind of stuff in school, but this, you know, the atrocities are downplayed. The crimes of empire are downplayed. You know, are not mentioned at all. And really, that is what needs to change in this country. We need to confront that past. And, like, you know, it, not with token gestures or, like, you know, apologies that mean nothing. You know, we have to confront it head on. See it for the monstrosity. See imperialism for the monstrosity that it is. And reject it. You know, see, that's not who we are. You know, this is heritage as a country. This is heritage we reject. renounce that heritage. We're going to move away from that. You know, we're going to reject, this country is going to reject colonialism and move in a totally different direction. And move in a direction that allows self-determination for all the people, all this country's peoples. It's going to be a very, very different country. Very, very different Canada. For that to happen. That's one of the reasons why I am a communist. That's one of the reasons why I am a socialist. I believe there needs to be revolutionary change for that to happen in this country. And it will happen. It might be a very long and hard struggle to reach that point where justice can be secured for all of us, and especially for the indigenous communities. But this is what has to happen. The settler state in this country has to be confronted and overcome. And a new Canada needs to be built. This is absolutely essential. This is what has to be fought for. And people are fighting for it. And giving their all. To create a truly just society in this country. People are doing that. They have many different ways of doing it. And ultimately, I believe people are going to come to the realization the only way to do that is through socialism. We saw in other countries, we saw in the Soviet Union, how long oppressed indigenous communities were given self-determination. They achieved self-determination. The Soviet state facilitated their development rather than repressing it. Instead of exploiting them, it empowered them. But that was the Uzbeks or the Yakuts or all these different peoples who were repressed before 1917 and marginalized. And there were attempts made to assimilate them into Russian culture. And of course, after the revolution of 1917, all those policies, all those bigoted, racist, imperialist policies were reversed. And a new nation was constructed. A multinational nation. A nation that did empower its minority peoples. Empower them to educate their children in their own language and their own culture, up to and including university level, which is something that does not exist in this country for indigenous people. It did not confine them to reserves. It empowered them. It assisted them in economic development. It allowed them to control the pace of economic development and what the kind of development they wanted, so that they could reap the benefits of modern society without giving up their identity as a people. Without giving up their soul, without giving up who they were. That was not something that was asked of them, to sacrifice themselves, unlike the way it is in this country. Where indigenous people pretty much have to give up their status as indigenous people, give up their identity, if they want to, even leave a reservation and live somewhere else. They have to basically sacrifice themselves. And that, of course, is a crime. So these things have been overcome before. Colonialism has been overcome before, many times, many places around the world. And it can be overcome here. I have absolute faith in that. And that's what has to be done. And of course, the reason why I say that, of course, we need socialism in this country in order to achieve this is because what is empire based on? It's based on the profit motive. It's based on accumulation. It's based on exploitation of people. Unless we overcome that system, which constantly has to expand, constantly has to get more and more and more and reap more profits, exploit more resources, which capitalism really is founded upon. Unless we get rid of that system, we overcome that system, we overthrow it and replace it with a system that is based on the needs of people, the empowerment of working people. Unless we do that, then, we cannot overcome colonialism. We cannot overcome empire. We have to overcome the system which empire is based on. This is why we need socialism in this country. It's why there needs to be revolutionary change in this country. And I have, once again, as I said before, I have faith that this can be done here. It's been done many other places. It can be done. And it has to be done for there to be justice in this land. And so that's the thought I'm going to leave you on here tonight, brothers and sisters. So until next time. Until next time. Please stay tuned to Back in the USSR and solidarity with you all. Keep fighting the good fight. And remember, we will win.
I'll sing a song of the northern land, where the young republic was bred and born, where men of all creed joined hand in hand to meet the Sassnach might with scorn, where heroes fought and where martyrs died for Ireland's honor and Ireland's weal, where faith is stronger than English pride and love more lasting than English steel. Antrim and Down and Donegal, Cavan, Fermanagh and Green Tyrone, Derry, Monaghan, Armagh, we love them all for the tales they tell us of days long flown, for the songs they sing us of 98, of Orr, McCracken and brave Monroe, of Hope and Russell and Betsy Gray, and a thousand others who faced the foe. From proud Cave Hill up to Breffni's Fields, from the eastern billows to Innis-Owen, the breezes are telling 100 tales of the ones who battled to hold their own. Of boys like Nielsen, the young and brave, of maids and mothers and manly men, of priest and parson who gladly gave their lives that the land might be free again. Men of the north, no shame is yours. You are still unbeaten by greed and hate. The hope of centuries endures, and the faith that was flaming in 98. The day is dawning when northern men shall sweep the foeman from sea to sea, and songs of joy will be sung again at northern firesides in Ireland free.
flow combat. Be I born that, beaches torn that, reformat the masses. I'm redrafting the battle map set, cough up task list. I build a classic boom bap blast, bazooka rap shit. I'm sending heads into backspin, attack with wind at the back, plus vernaculars to dig it back my facts. Packed with the stat charts and graphs, I got passion, burn mics up to ashes. I make fascists crapped in pantses, stanzas, cure cultural cancer. I got tunes that move you to dance, burn flags, anthem, throw a tantrum. Getting out of hand with these random acting tactics against the axis. My word act like nominally gat, rhymingly packed, punch, crash the fun by metric tons. And plus my math, distribute cash among the classes, take from the thieving greedy bastard, get back like church has to get past, collapse structure, fuck facades, I destruct the support beams and bars, wrecking ball large, resistance, subversive diction, flip the shit just like a brick throne, deep long kings, bring the trees on, my tone rock like keyboard.